It's the show Agent Orange / Adolf Twitler would love to shut down.
So here's the story, folks. I am the least black person that you've ever seen in your entire life. In fact, we did very well relative to racist people.
It's the no bullshit zone.
It's called fake news.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
I know who you are. Just wait.
On the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome to it. Holy cow, do we have a lot to cover this week and probably going up for a little bit longer before some changes are made. Before we get to all of that, well, we'll cover today some Mueller, some Trump, some investigations, some Nielsen, and some March Madness. Before all of that, though, some introductions are in line. Hi, I am your host, a critical thinker, problem solver, guy with a possible head injury, and still somewhat doing this show. My name is Shaggy Jenkins. You can find me at my website, shaggyjenkins.com, or wherever fine social media is served, at Shaggy Live. Stomping ground somewhere around West Texas, he is a former politician, current educator, and a guy that has to endure my terrible sense of humor. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for our correspondent from the great nation of Texas, Drew Landry.
Hey, yeah. Hey, good to be with you. And believe me, no one has a worse sense of humor than me. So we're battling for the bottom.
Actually, when we talk about bad sense of humors, can we go ahead and just bring up somebody that has not had a good sense of humor lately? Donald J. Trump. And one of the things that he is not laughing about as much as he used to is immigration. Now, we know that he lied about where his father was born. We know he lied about where, basically, he gets his wives. It's a website. But the thing that he has really been a lying on lately is this whole southern border crisis that you guys in Texas apparently are like 3 seconds away from becoming Mad Max Fury Road from.
I'm kind of concerned that, you know, if I drive outside of my driveway or I go anywhere, I might run into an immigrant. Who knows?
You know, the funny thing is you might not run into an immigrant, but you probably will run into a guy with a flaming guitar because Texas. But one of the things is that with Texas, they've always kind of had like a more realistic, more pragmatic sense of what is going on in the whole immigration debate. And as such, one of the people that Texans kind of scratch their heads at, more so than anybody else, is one Kristen Nielsen. What can you tell me about people from your state and their opinion of Nielsen, no relation to Bridget?
Yeah, she's not exactly the most popular person around. When Congressman Will Hurd from the 23rd District, which, by the way, covers east of El Paso and goes as far about as west as San Antonio, which is an incredibly large district and incredibly amount of land. Okay. Like you might be able to fit maybe like, I don't know, 400 Hawaiis in this place here, maybe even more. Whenever he says we don't need a wall, whenever he says that the separation crisis that was going on is just unfathomable and completely just abnormal and flat out terrible, you know that this is just an unoriginal, unorthodox, just flat out wrong type of strategy that even Nielsen brought out here. So she's not well thought of with more pragmatic thinkers of the state.
Yeah, because when it comes to Nielsen herself, one of the things that we can say about her character is she has been called everything from the baby separator to the weirdly racist blonde woman who wants to speak to your manager, not now, but right now. I mean, she's acquired some rather distasteful stereotypes, but this is the thing, Drew, she's never done anything at all to kind of fight these negative stereotypes. In fact, in times, kind of playing into it of, ha ha ha, if the brown people hate me, I must be doing my job correctly. Is that kind of the reason that people in Texas just don't like her general style of operation?
Yeah, that's part of it. It's also the fact that, you know, she's just just dehumanizes the entire thing. I mean, it's just, you know, this is a process where people will come to this country with the shirt on their back, with the jeans that they wear, maybe have shoes, if they have those things at all. They want to be part of this. They view this country as the shining hill on the city. I'm sorry, the shining city on the hill, as Reagan would say. You know, these types of, you know, positive things that make our country, sorry, Mr. President, that make our country great. And what she is doing is just completely saying that these are, you know, terrible people, that they're trying to just come in and infiltrate you. I mean, it's all these fear mongering, all these fear tactics that play right into the president's whole agenda on this. And so, you know, this whole, you know, separation of family thing that she was able to institute, you know, it just played bad. It was just an awful ricochet back into her face. But the thing that is incredibly odd about her was that she didn't apologize for any of those things. She doubled down on them. She came back and said, we're going to do it. So what? And facing heat from Congress on this, she just said, look, it's the policy. It's what we're going to do. Well, you're not there anymore. So, you know, and now the president wants to go in a different direction, which is odd. And he says he wants to do more harsh things. I don't know what that's going to entail, but I think we're going to pine for the days of Nielsen.
Yeah, because see, here's the thing. Nielsen's kind of an easy target. Like I said, one, he hasn't been exactly a lovey-dovey with the media and even members of Congress. Let's not forget, every single time she has been called to testify in front of any sort of congressional board, contentious and uncooperative at best, I think would be the two monikers that we could describe Mrs. Nielsen's kind of interactions with other bodies of government. So as Trump over the last 2 weeks kind of ramped up his rhetoric to Sunday, it wasn't a big surprise when somewhere around 6 p.m. Washington time, Donald Trump took to Twitter and say, Nielsen's out. The Department of Homeland Security is going to have the acting chief be the guy from the Customs Board. And, hey, make America great again. But this is the thing. Even though the president thanked Nielsen on his Twitter account, and Nielsen, in fact, thanked Trump on her Twitter account when she posted up her resignation letter, over the last couple of weeks, Drew, their relationship has been, over this tougher policy, kind of loggerheads, would you say?
Yeah, I would. You know, we don't really know what exactly all the tougher policy is, but we can kind of get an idea as to what it's going to entail in some broad sense. I mean, you know, the president has always said the same thing. He wants a wall. He wants to do this, you know, this very tough enforcement, doesn't want to do catch and release and all this and that. But it turns out because of economic problems that this whole, you know, shutting off the border thing could possibly cause, let alone the fact of diplomatic relations with our top trade partner in the world, that being Mexico. This whole thing has really come to a, you know, I can't really always breathe fire. I kind of have to, you know, use a butter knife sometimes. And, you know, look, the thing with Nielsen was that I think she may not have been 100% on board with this. I think he was getting frustrated. This new guy, I don't really know too much about him, to be honest. But if the president says it's going to be tough, what are they going to do? You know, like make a game show out of this? I mean, Trump's good at making game shows out of things and reality shows out of, you know, nothing and, you know, whatever else. I mean, I'm just curious as to how more he can dehumanize people who come into this country, people who want to live here from other countries. I'm just curious as to how more tough this is going to get.
Oh, yeah, because this will be tough. Now, if you think about it, at this point, Donald Trump has had a friend in Nielsen when it came to the testifying in front of congressional committees and the ilk, because she was very strongly in the Trump corner. and as of about 3 weeks ago, was even putting out letters saying they're going, the president is not lying. The border secure. The border crisis is very, very real. I know for a fact I'm down there and I'm the frontline soldier telling you that this is bad, bad, bad. Basically counter to what the intelligence community and local law enforcement in Texas and California, Arizona included, all said back to the Border Patrol agents. Counter to all of that, Nielsen has went time and time again to the extreme. Like even saying, hey, you know that migrant caravan that was supposed to be so much trouble? There was indeed Taliban and Al-Qaeda terrorists in there. She backed the president on over a claim that had no basis in reality and no validity or verifying information from any intelligence community, including Guatemala, Cuba, Colombia, Mexico. Yeah, you get the picture. There's a lot of places that this caravan moved through, except for Cuba. Cuba was my bad.
You're allowed a few. It's okay.
You know, migrant caravans need to vacation, too. So they were like, you know what? Oh, this migration has me thirsty. Havana!
Hey, I got a raft.
Right. Jesus, Shaggy, learn geography. But as the migrant caravan moves through South America, Trump has basically said, and this is a part of his new direction as well. He has said that it has always, always, always been the utmost responsibility of Mexico to deal with the whole migrant crisis. Now, when it comes to Nielsen's sudden resignation, Trump over the last week was telling everybody that, hey, look, I have to change this whole border thing because Mexico has indeed upped the ante and they're starting to enforce their migration programs that keep the crisis from our southern border. In other words, he made up another lie, and because he's perpetrating this lie, and Nielsen no longer kind of wants to go this direction of how many times do you expect me to do this, boom, a resignation happens. Now, this is the thing. Although it appears to be amicable, would you say, because we all know who is really behind this, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Miller. Stephen Miller has been like playing puppet master on the immigration and naturalization process since day one in the Trump administration. Stephen Miller has been, dare I say, disappointed with Nielsen over the last couple of months. So I'm going to ask you a question, Drew. Is this, in fact, an amicable split between Nielsen and the Trump administration as portrayed on Twitter, or is this political machinations from Stephen Miller behind the scenes to get a more hard-line anti-immigration person as head of the DHS?
Yeah, it sounds, you know, you always want to believe the former than the latter, but the truth of the matter is that it comes as from the latter than the former. What I'm saying here is that this is very much political gamemanship. This is very much the fact that she's not going to be their little person to go out to the public and spout whatever that we can do, more fear-mongering to get our wall and to get more people who will talk tough about the border and will just say, you know, research and all these other types of things. Doesn't matter what local law enforcement say. Doesn't matter. None of these things are truthfully needing is what I'm trying to get out here. Don't need the truth. What we're really wanting here is to win 2020, win that election, and we'll win it on the aspect of security. And Nielsen's not wanting to play ball anymore because she's worried about her own credibility. So you know what? You got to go. Stephen Miller is. I have to say this. This is my own personal thing. I think he is about as racist as anybody could ever be. He can try and defend that on his own time, and I'm sure he's losing a lot of sleep as to however I feel about him. But, you know, he has come out time and time again to try to shore up all of these immigration things, and he has made, you know, comment after comment, writing after writing on the far-right blogs, on the far-right news, fake news cycles, of stating how, you know, this is the biggest problem, you know, since, you know, World War II or whatever the case may be. He's trying his best to make people scared and fearful of all this. And what's the best way to do it? You get rid of the Department of Homeland Security secretary, and you say that somehow she's too soft on this, which is an incredible thought. But the fact that the president has come out and said, you know, we're going to go in a tougher direction, you just have to scratch your head and think, you know, like I've asked this question before, what does tough look like if it's beyond what Nielsen was doing? I guess we're going to see that because, you know, the president doesn't want to nominate anybody. He just wants to put a whole bunch of acting people in here. And if they're acting, then they can be, you know, they can do what they want and they subvert some sort of a senatorial hearing and confirmation process. Now I'm getting in the weeds of things, but look, you know, this is how you can get it, you know, what you want. Make acting director, acting director, acting director. And I'm thinking of an actual person. And so this is how he's going to get what he wants. It's going to be tougher than what Secretary Nielsen has with this acting person being the DHS secretary. And you're just going to have to wonder here, you know, how far does this go? Now, I kind of rambled off here, but, you know, coming back to the center to answer your question, yes, this is all Stephen Miller. And it's all him, and there's no ands, ifs, or buts about it.
You know, I mean, I'm kind of less likely to agree with the politics of Stephen Miller than I am the politics of the late Stephen Irwin, where, look, this is a guy that really just like, crikey, getting in the weeds there. So
yeah, sorry.
I mean, no, this is the thing about those weeds that you brought up, though, and it's kind of a very important fact. Look, right now, and this is kind of unprecedented, we have the major organizations, let me go ahead and list them off here. Major organizations all ran by temporary or acting directors. Now, these include the Department of Homeland Security as of today. Mm-hmm. That also, as of this, today, the first official day. Then there's the, get this, the Pentagon, the United States Department of the Interior, is also functioning under an acting director. And that doesn't include all the other boards and posts within the cabinet that have yet to be filled because Trump and his cronies have been concentrating on loading the judiciary. Plus, let's just go ahead and face facts. That's where they're actually taking this battle. Stephen Miller knew that if you can't win in the court of public interest or through the Senate, the way to do it was to stack the judiciary. And as such, their guy, Kevin McAlenon, I think I'm saying it right. He's an alien. Oh, God, I feel like that guy from that show on History Channel. It was an alien. Kevin was his name. Kevin, the McAlien. This is the thing. He is right now the head of the Customs Boards and Custom Borders and Protections Bureau. He'll be moving over as acting head of DHS. That means, just like you said, again, going into the weeds, mate. Going into the weeds here, that means that Trump now can kind of hard-nose whatever immigration policy he wants, something that Stephen Miller would really like to get his hands on, before they actually confirm a new head. And here's the thing. Unlike any other time in Trump's strategies where Kevin would be the guy that would be up next, in this case, it looks like the Trump administration only wants this as a temporary appointment for the Department of Homeland Security, opting instead to kind of go into an open recruitment process. Knowing the policies of Stephen Miller and such, I mean, is there any doubt that we'll see basically a racist orangutan elected to this post? Or who are the actual candidates besides digging up Hitler and doing something with his DNA?
Yeah, I don't know. What a great question. We can spend more time talking about the whole aspect of these acting directors and how they're subverting, the Constitution and all that. And that's an even larger problem. But you just have to, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that, look, this is a way for Stephen Miller to get this type of tougher immigration policy, one that he's been longing for, and he got into a public argument with Jim Acosta, a journalist out of CNN, over this whole aspect of America and immigration and where we're headed. So I think this is playing right into his hand. I do want to say this though, because Stephen Miller, got his claim to fame because people often wonder, he's not even 35, he's not even close to being 40, and you're probably wondering how in the world this guy even come around and how did he even get famous? Well, he became famous because he defended successfully, and this is the truth, he successfully defended the Duke lacrosse team. And back, 2005, 2006, when they were alleged of gang raping a prostitute or a stripper or which one?
It was a stripper.
Okay. And the public opinion was ready to say, send him in jail, fry him, whatever. And, then the evidence came out and Stephen Miller and the Duke lacrosse team were acquitted and vindicated and all that sort of thing. And this has kind of got his stock to rise. And so, and getting involved in right-wing politics, and he was able to, really attach himself to the strength and message and America First message of Donald Trump. And this is where he is now. He's working inside the White House. He's a key advisor to the president. So, it's always interesting as to how people get where they are, and and he's now being a big mover and shaker inside the White House, and his big checkmate was to Kirstjen Nielsen and saying, hey, sorry, you're out of DHS, and I'm going to make sure that I get somebody who I want in here who's going to do our strong policy at the border.
And this is just kind of me circling back to a comment that you made earlier, but it does kind of seem that Stephen Miller does approach his bed every night with, wow, honey, we found a way to keep kids in cages, and I got rid of a lady that wasn't racist enough for the Department of Homeland Security. Good night. Tomorrow we're going to figure out how to feed them straight to a tree grinder. Good night.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy that it seems like when you talk about people that just have no compassion, Stephen Miller is the most hardest-nosed hardliner that DC has ever seen, especially when it comes to, and I mean, this is the truth, since the time of Woodrow Wilson, who did have ties to the Ku Klux Klan, by the way, since the time of Woodrow Wilson and his Klan tie-ins, have we not seen in DC a guy as white supremacist as Stephen Miller? Is that a factual statement that I can throw out there?
I think you'd feel pretty good about laying down that hand. I mean, I even think Dick Cheney, former Vice President Cheney, would go, oh, boy, you need to calm down. And that says a lot if Dick Cheney's going to say something like that to anybody. So, and Dick Cheney shot a guy in the face and made him apologize. So, yeah, I think that's something that is, I think you feel pretty good about laying down this straight flush.
Now, the thing is about this whole story is at the end of the day, because here's the thing. Trump is trying to reposition everything for 2020. And Nielsen typically has not had a lot of fans within his own base, basically for the reason that Stephen Miller says that she's not good at her job and she's not tough enough. When it comes to winning the 2020 race, what kind of candidate do you think that Trump is going to go to after having such a supportive sycophant like Nielsen was? Who could possibly be the replacement for that?
Stephen Miller? That's the only one who I could probably think of. Maybe he can, get Roger Stone out of his problems and make him, over there too. I don't know. It's the big question mark. That's what they call the $64,000 question.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, if Stephen Miller became the leader of the Department of Homeland Security, and every time he entered a room, would the lights flicker and would we hear organ music?
I think even he would say, I don't think so.
Right, and I mean, would he make his appearance something like, hang on, it would be something like a vampire hello, like rising from the floor. Would that be like the Stephen Miller entrance? Because, I mean, this is a guy, for all intents and purposes, wears the badge of violent racist with glee.
Yeah, I don't think he would rise in. I think he would fly in as a bat, you know. So in the stream of the night, in the heat of the night, he'd come flying in, and then, you know, hang himself upside down for a little while, and then poof, there he is.
Do we have to do the bad Bulgarian accent? I want to write your legislation. Immigration is bad. We need walls. You know, I apologize to Stephen Miller's father, who has, in fact, apologized to the nation for Stephen Miller.
I think he needs to do it again.
Right. I'm telling you, man, between me and you, we need to figure out. But look, wrapping this whole thing up in a bow.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, here's the thing. Whose agenda is now in control of immigration? Trump or Miller's?
Miller's. And shoot, you could even say that they're intertwined now. I think maybe the president has really just signed on and said, you know what, blank check, tell me what you want, let's go do it. And, you know, the tougher I can be, the more strong I can have people perceive that I am, better candidate that I'll be for 2020. Yeah. So I think that might be what it comes down to.
Yeah, well, what it comes down to for us is we're up against the break right now. When we get back, we've got to talk a little bit about the craziness of Trump attacking the Mueller report. And seriously, Texas sport fans, we have to have a moment. That's all when we get back to the Shaggy Chicken Show.
This is Scientific American's 60 Second Science. I'm Christopher Intagliata. The hardest part of chasing monkeys through the jungle isn't the snakes.
The snakes, they are not going to attack you if you don't have contact with them.
It's simply keeping up with the monkeys.
They are jumping from one tree to another tree, so they don't care if the landscape is difficult or if there is a river.
Jose Domingo Ordóñez Gómez. He's a primatologist at the German Primate Center in Göttingen. The reason he was pursuing 35 spider monkeys through the rainforests of southern Mexico was to record their whinnies. By analyzing more than 500 calls, he found that when a monkey was separated from the group by more than 40 meters or 130 feet, it produced a lower pitched call than when the same monkey was nearby the group. Ordóñez Gómez thinks the pitch choice may be because lower frequency calls are better suited to travel long distances through dense jungle. The findings are in the journal PLOS ONE. Ordóñez Gómez also found that other spider monkeys responded back more quickly when they heard one of the low pitch calls compared to a regular whinny. Perhaps, he says, because there's something about the deeper calls that really gets the attention of eavesdropping monkeys. It's a relatable feeling for any human primate who's heard a crying baby. Thanks for listening. For Scientific American's 60 Second Science, I'm Christopher Intagliata.
News from the left and the right. From the guy a bit off center and slightly out of his f-ing mind. It's the Shaggy Chicken Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Chicken Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back. Of course, I am your host, Shaggy Jenkins. And if you missed anything of the first part of our show or any of our previous shows, you probably had. I checked the ratings. You need to go to my website, ShaggyJenkins.com, or wherever fine podcasting is served, Spotify, iTunes, what have you. Just look for the Shaggy Jenkins Show. Oh, before we get back into some of our stories, I should say, hey, everybody, welcome back. I'm Shaggy Jenkins, the host of the show, and joining me this week is, of course, correspondent from the District of West Texas. He's a former politician, current educator, and guy that has to endure my head trauma. Please welcome back to the show, Drew Landry.
Hey, it's always good to hang out with you, head trauma or not.
Yeah, it's like, if you're nursing a possible concussion, that makes the show even better. Speaking of traumatic brain injuries, did Donald Trump catch one this week, Drew? Because I kind of noticed that he was real just normal kind of Trump all the way up through Friday night. And then it was like he took a nap, had a big boy sandwich, perhaps a Big Mac. And then Saturday all the way through Sunday, he went on this strange retelling of recent history and news. Drew, did I miss a memo? Did I walk into the Twilight Zone? What's happening here?
Well, you may have walked into the Twilight Zone. Of course, I think that would happen if the president just said, you know, I'm really nice and everyone likes me. That might be the Twilight Zone. But, you know, I just
He's already said that, Drew.
Oh.
He's already said that. Perhaps we're in the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, you know, what's down is up and what is up is down. This is, you know, crazy land. So anyway,
picture it, if you will, a man, a politician, and a way of doing things that does not work with reality. Ladies and gentlemen, you've stepped into the Trump zone.
Yeah. So, you know, what we had here was another one of these little tweet storms that the president, you know, went on his little temper tantrum and just basically just said, look, these Democrats want to see the Mueller report. I had the opportunity to read it. I haven't read it. I don't think I'm going to. It already says how, you know, how I'm exonerated from obstruction and there's no collusion. This is a witch hunt. These 13 Dems are just out to get me. But I don't need to do anything. And then he ends like this one tweet saying, never forget. I don't know what we're supposed to never forget, but I guess the fact he doesn't want us to forget his tweet. So there's that. So,
Mr. President, we can't. They're archived at the Library of Congress.
It's, yeah, all from the day he took office from now until he leaves office, they're going to be archived. And what good reading material that would be for, like, you know, a fourth grader. So anyway, or how bad it would be.
Mommy, what's a porn star?
So
America 2019, causing therapy bills of children in 2035.
But it's just so interesting to me that he just can't let anything go. I don't know why why I'm so surprised by that. I shouldn't be. I guess I'm surprised at my own surprisal at the fact that, you know, he has to go after the New York Times. I don't know if they've ever liked him. I don't think he probably thinks that they have. But he attacks the New York Times for saying how the Mueller report and those who were working on it were incredibly frustrated by the Barr four-page synopsis of a 700-page report. And they were going, well, it's far, you know, the New York Times reports that the Mueller report was far more damning than what Barr was reporting out. And Trump just says, you know, this is, you know, no legitimate sources, totally illegal. In fact, they didn't have any sources at all. They're just making it up. All of these things. And, they need to apologize for their incorrect and inaccuracies. And I mean, this is just, you know, I don't know. I you figure since he took his nap, like you mentioned earlier, he would have felt better. Maybe he just, you know, something didn't agree with his stomach and, you know, he was sitting on the pot and this is what we got.
Yeah, well, President Cranky Pants here did make a couple of glaring little omissions of truth in his Twitter tirade, because one of the things that he said was, this thing spent $35 million and found absolutely nothing. Drew, it found over 24 different indictments, both foreign and domestic, and also spurned investigations, some dozen or more, from the Southern District of New York and other organizations into Trump's four different financial empires. Just last week, as part of not being able to get the probe thanks to the Barr summary, House Democrats also opened up investigations using a little-known precedent to acquire 6 years of the president's personal tax returns. Now, this, of course, led to Mulvaney going on to, like, the Sunday circuit and saying things like, the Democrats will never see their tax return. But then again, here's the thing. Donald Trump hasn't been a good litmus test. as it were, for how things are going in the investigation against him. When it comes to his tweets, though, Drew, he's dead wrong about the impact and finding of them. Is this Trump not being properly informed? Or is it Trump once again trying to delegitimize something that he knows is bad for the Trump brand and start the discrediting campaign ahead of Democrats forcing the release?
You know, you try to take people at their word and you want to believe what they say in some good faith. You want to take some good measure in this. But let's just face facts here. Donald Trump and later President Trump has been in the limelight for at least 40 years, if not longer. Okay? It's not like we don't know who he is. And we have known. And even whenever he started this campaign, he has been saying misinformation and falsehoods, or as Kellyanne Conway would say, alternative facts. He's been saying these types of things for a long time. And it's not like, you know, oops, I didn't mean to do that. It's not like he's the absent-minded president. It's a calculated effort to discredit, to do all of these things to delegitimize the entire report ahead of the 2020 campaign. That's what this is about. And so whenever this report is going to come out, I originally said 700 pages. I'm sorry, I misspoke. It's about 400 pages. So I guess I'm saving everyone about 300 pages there, which is always nice. But, you know, the thing that we have to remember is that, you know, he's done this before. He did this while the investigation was going on. And now he's doing it now that it's over. So it's this interesting contradiction. I mean, you know, Giuliani was on CBS Face the Nation this morning, on Sunday morning. And so he said, you know, look, you know, he went on this whole trick of trying to discredit the investigation. The moderator calls him out and goes, now, how in the world can you discredit what they did yet accept their conclusions? And you know, that seems contradictory. And he goes, no, it's because they didn't find anything. So had they found something, they wouldn't have accepted the conclusions. So, you know, this whole thing has been rigged on the Trump side. And their response has been incredibly staged, more so than any pro wrestling match that could ever be out there. So this is kind of where we are here. I'm sorry to really go on a rant here, but there's a connection here between what the president is trying to do, again, to discredit what is happening, yet at the same time accept the conclusions that has been made in the Barr synopsis of the Mueller report that they gladly accept. You can't, I mean, this is like, you know, two, you know, paradoxes here. They just simply don't go together. How can you reconcile this? Well, as Giuliani said, it's because we got what we want. And I think that's just what he's trying to say here, is that, well, it's a terrible thing. No one should ever go through this, but they didn't find anything, so big deal. And you're going, wait a minute. This doesn't make any sense. But then President Trump doesn't make any sense either.
Yeah, because, I mean, I understand that Giuliani is pulling the thousand monkeys, thousand typewriters defense of the Mueller investigation, basically saying that if you put a thousand monkeys into a room with a thousand typewriters, eventually they will create all the works of Robert Mueller. That's not really how that goes, but look it up. You'll see it's actually a very clever joke that was funny four decades ago.
Yep.
Getting back into this, though. He is kind of going with that model of saying, look, because there was disorganization, who cares? Because there was madness, who cares? Because it was obviously a political rigged agenda, who cares? Because at the end of the day, the thousand monkeys found out on the report that all they could type was Trump is innocent. And that's the part that we're taking away from it. In all fairness, though, Mueller prosecutors and people that were on the special counsel with Robert Mueller have been kind of secretly steaming. Now, because of the rules of special counsel, they can't come forward and make public statements. But insiders in Washington, D.C. have pointed to an increasingly frustrated group of people because they said that William Barr's 4-page summary is, in fact, inaccurate in how it portrays the culpability of Donald Trump. Is there a reason between the prosecutors coming out within, I'd say, the last 7 or 8 days with this kind of a statement. Donald Trump spending the weekend attacking the Mueller case and then Monday finding the Senate back hard to work, one side trying to stop the release and the other side trying to make the release happen. When it comes to the Mueller investigation, are we shocked at anything anymore?
You know, we've been so desensitized by what the president and his tactics are to try to attack it and discredit it. I don't think we fully can be surprised by anything that, that happens. I think, truth be told, if the House Democrats don't subpoena Barr, Mueller, anybody else on that team, you know, the House Judiciary Committee brings this out, or even the, you know, government affairs and oversight, anybody on that, any type of committee in the House that wants to bring these people to a set of questioning, I think if they don't show up, I think that, you know, if that would be kind of a telling sign. But I would actually be kind of stunned, and stunned, like with a stun gun that would last maybe 10 seconds. If the Democrats don't subpoena Mueller, if they don't subpoena Barr, that would be kind of a stunner for me, especially since the chair of the Intelligence Committee, Schiff, has been going on this tirade about, you know, I'm really beating the drum that there was collusion and this is not the right thing. So he's really sticking his entire credibility out here. And I would be rather stunned, again, for about 10 seconds, if Mueller was not subpoenaed and if he did not show up. You know, I just have to, those on the angry side of Donald Trump who are mad at him and mad about him, they were all in on the Mueller investigation. This is going to find the strict connection between him and Russia. And there's going to be a whole bunch of things there. And then, you know, they were defending him. And then now they're saying, oh, he was just like a Republican, just like the rest of them. I don't think that's fair. I don't think it's fair for the president to say that, you know, Mueller is conflicted either. I mean, this is a guy who had an objective, was to find something. He did find that Russia was in our elections, that they've meddled and attacked us through this. But everything else has to be, you know, brought out in the clear in of this 400-page report, just like that too much information of the Ken Starr report. I don't know if you remember that, but, you know, this is, you know, we need this type of information. Our democracy, our democratic small d values are very much at stake here, and we need to know what was found. We need it presented in with clear wording and no questions asked. The president, Rand Paul, Lindsey Graham, Mitch McConnell, they don't want this stuff out there. And this is my question to them. If you think this completely exonerates you, why would you not want the public to see it? That's what I don't understand. And they have yet to answer this question, and they need to.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. A lot of the questions that are unanswered are, can the president actually see the report like he claimed on his Twitter account? Because he said on the Sunday tirade that he's like, I have not read the report, although I could. It's my right. And I'm going, no, because we have this precedent set up from Bill Clinton's impeachment process where Bill Clinton, in fact, tried to read the Starr report before it was made available to Congress and the public. And they set a precedent at that time. No, you do not have executive privilege in the case of a special counsel set up by the legislative branch. Boy, whoever thought that day that I didn't fall asleep in civics would come in handy. But getting back to the whole narrative of this story, you see, on one side we have Schiff, and Schiff is after like nothing more than let's get full disclosure, as much disclosure as we can possibly get. Let's get that disclosure. On the other side, though, let's talk about Nunes. You know Devin Nunes, right? He just lost his gavel power. He said that this week, thanks to the acting head of the Department of Justice and such, that they're going to put out 8 inquest letters. In other words, he, even though he doesn't have gavel power, is doing the exact thing that Trump has accused Democrats of doing. Nunes is starting a political witch hunt through the Department of Justice only to help delegitimize and to discredit the Mueller findings. This is a problem. Don't you think so, Drew?
Oh, it absolutely is. And there's no one more conflicted, more compromised than Devin Nunes. This is a, I mean, his incredible stories of being in, you know, having his direct connections with the president, you know, releasing information that, shouldn't be released. I mean, there isn't anyone more conflicted throughout all this stuff. And that is so incredibly frustrating whenever he is doing exactly what the president is accusing the other party of doing. So if you really want to look for any type of messing around or any other type of shenanigans or even chicanery, it's with Devin Nunes and his inability to do this sort of thing.
Right. But Trump clearly wants the American public to jump on this bandwagon of, oh, the evil Democrats. Oh, they come after. Like, he goes in on his Twitter account and he uses language like, this is presidential harassment. Your president shouldn't have to endure this. And a lot of people are going, who is your Kemosabe? But the thing is when it comes to Donald Trump and his public proclamations against the investigation on him, the tactics that he says the Democrats, the angry Democrats, use are in fact the tactics that people like Stephen Miller has used up against Nielsen, which we resulted in a resignation over the weekend. And let's just be honest, Lindsey Graham wishes that he could use against Democrats that he sees disagreements into, looking into Trump's financial records, and Devin Nunes, who wants to use the judicial branch that he knows that Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump helped stack over the last 2 years in his favor to launch political witch hunts against the Democrats. These are all the things that Trump says, all the machinations, I should say, that the Democrats have used against Trump. Yet I see no evidence of them doing it. And now, I mean, come on. In like 3 days, we have evidence of him doing 1 through 5. What gives, man?
Hey, I wish I could, you know, I think we all need to sit down with a therapist at the end of this and just kind of just, you know, spill all this stuff out, because that's about how I'm feeling about it. You know, if there's ever a case for Trump to not have a second term, you just spelled it out. And believe me, there are several other cases for him to not to have a second term. But you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, he likes to say that if, you know, he buys into this theory that if the president does it, it's therefore not illegal. So the president cannot commit a crime. It's exactly what Nixon thought. It's what W. Bush thought. And it's what, you know, President Trump thinks. If I do it, it's legal. I cannot commit a crime. That, I don't know what warped idea you have, but that's not the case. And you haven't read Article 2 of the Constitution, and or even Article 1, for that matter. You probably don't even know what the Constitution is, because it doesn't say your name, President Trump. Anyway, so that's the, you know, that's really, you know, where we are here. It's just this, I'm in charge. It's fine for me, but when, you know, it's bad for you, you can't do it, I can. So what? You know, and that's, you know, he just.
This is the problem. And I'm just going to spell this out pretty boldly for everybody that's been following any of the other election. See, Donald Trump's administration has led to, dare I say, democratic debauchery, a little bit of a constitutional conundrum, an electoral. Okay, I can't think of another E word. Look, sorry, my thesaurus ran out. I have a head wound. But the thing that I've tried to say here is when it comes to like all of the methodology that we see behind campaigns, this has got to be one of the craziest strategies I have ever observed in political history, ever. And this is going to be one of the things that we need to realize about the 2020 election. We've had stories of people trying to get rid of the Electoral College, probably a very good idea. Trying to make the vote more accessible and equitable, probably a really good idea, since Republicans only win in heavily gerrymandered and racially suppressed voter areas. Moving on. The other thing that you've probably seen in the news is how they're trying to figure out a way to basically concrete lock in fairness between the three branches of government so that McConnell and Trump's stacking of the judiciary branch won't have a long-term impact like political pundits are predicting. That's a lot of peas. They're saying about an impact of like 30 to 40 years right now on American diplomacy. So, Drew, with all of this stuff that I just laid out there, here's the thing. Is it really the fault of having two polarized parties and only two parties dictate how the United States is run?
Yeah. Oh, man. You know, this is a question that's been asked for a long time. The parties themselves would tell you this isn't an issue because most people can get around either one or the other. And that's, you know, kind of where we are. But, you know, we have, you know, the parties haven't been this bad. Like this type of polarization hasn't existed in Congress really since the Civil War. And there's an ongoing conversation about where polarization starts and all that stuff. It's within political science. You all are more welcome to go find the literature and have at it. But understand this, when you have a polarizing figure inside the White House that blames the other side for everything, things aren't going to get better. And when you constantly have the idea that whatever you believe in is automatically attached to your values, therefore you're never going to compromise, that's not good. That's a recipe for destruction. And that's where we are right now. That's it's more or less if you step into the middle, you're coming into no man's land, and you'll be primaried on the left or primaried on the right, and then because you're not conservative or liberal enough. That is the ongoing political reality. And the only way that we're going to have any type of way to repair that, to be the repairer of the breach, is to really just say, you know, we don't, is to, for one day, somebody to just kind of break all this stuff up and say, we got to have a new type of start. And I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what that person is. But right now, that person could very well be the opposite of Donald Trump. And, we'll just have to, this sounds so cliche and so bad, but we're just going to have to find out.
Yeah. Well, speaking of things that are uncertain, things that are having to do with loyalty, with dedication, with adversity, with challenges over the year, and finally, with elements of mass destruction. Can we please talk about March Madness and how your state just does not know how to celebrate? Drew, fill us in about this scooter fire.
Okay, so I live in West Texas, you know, and so I live in, I'll even give you the city. Y'all can find me if you want. Lubbock. Okay. I live in Lubbock, Texas. Lubbock is known for having Texas Tech University. Okay. Texas Tech, for the first time ever in the program history, got into the Final Four of the national, of the NCAA, you know, tournament. And then they won their game. And now they're going to play in the national tournament game. And so when they won their game, like everything across the street from the university just kind of went kaboom. All right. Just, you know, they started to, you know, they turned over a car. They were setting couches on fire. And then they attacked and set fire to these Lime scooters, which oddly enough, there are, you know, Lubbock is large enough to have these scooters where you just kind of, you know, pay with your phone or your credit card or something, and then you just take the scooter and you go wherever. Okay. That's the idea behind it. And the company behind it is called Lime. Well, the thing that happened is they took some of those scooters and it's, you know, bought by the city. So the city's the one to do it. So the city lost some money. These aren't exactly cheap things, but, you know, nobody was arrested in Lubbock over this victory, but you kind of have to wonder here, because tear gas had to be sprayed, had the SWAT gear had to come out and get people to disperse. And, you know, it was like, you know, when the team finally wins, you think, this is what it's like. This is why we don't have nice things. This is the reason right here. Now, You know, you've talked about your North Carolina roots. North Carolina is rich in college basketball victories with Duke and North Carolina and the NC State improbable victory in 83. Texas doesn't have a whole lot of basketball victories. In Texas Wesleyan, now known as UTEP, when they beat, Kentucky in the 60s. That's it. This is kind of, this is like a big deal for those, especially those West Texas. And with Texas Tech doing this, it was like, whoa, look what we did. And it's like, oh, no, look what we did. We shouldn't have done that. That was really stupid. Now we're in the national media for the wrong reasons.
This is one of the rare times where me being from the state of North Carolina can talk down to another southern state. But Drew, here for the last minute and a half that I have on this. Oh, I'm sorry. I only have 15 seconds. Texas, you don't burn things when your team wins. You do that when your team loses after Janet Jackson shows her nipple at the Super Bowl. That's how you do sports. Drew, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you.
To everybody, see you next time. Love you, mean it. Get in, bye.